Welcome to the Ready to Run podcast. I'm your co-host, Efren Kabalius, and I'm a sports medicine physician.
I'm your co-host, Kurt Roser, and I'm a physical therapist. We're based out of the Boulder, Colorado area and have a passion for working with endurance athletes of all abilities. The goal of our podcast is to engage in thoughtful discussions with athletes, coaches, and clinicians to share knowledge within the field of sports medicine and inspire progression in the sport of running.
We hope to empower individuals to navigate injuries, reduce injury risk, optimize training and performance, and provide listeners with the tools needed to get ready to run.
You'll be able to listen to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you enjoy listening to podcasts. Subscribe and leave a rating and review to let us know what you think and what you'd like to hear on the show.
You can also follow us on Instagram at Ready to Run Podcast, as well as our website, readytorunpodcast.com. This week, our guest is Rochelle Basil. Rochelle is a local elite long-distance runner, coach, and dog mom to two Ridgebacks, who is a native of New Zealand and now lives just outside of Boulder, Colorado. Her career highlights include competing in the World Cross Country Championships and running a 2:39 marathon in London. In this episode, she shares her personal story of the ups and downs of her career following a peroneal tendon injury and multiple bone stress injuries, which changed the trajectory of her career for several years. Getting back to good health and getting to the start line of a marathon was a goal she didn't think was possible for a long time. With patience, consistency, trust in the process, and support from those around her, she was finally able to reach her goal of getting to the start line of a marathon and crossing that finish line, and she did it with style, shoeless for the last 6 miles. More on that to come. Rochelle's journey is one that is defined by refinding the fun in running. This is a story that we know many runners are going through or have been through. We wanted to open this conversation to share the message that getting back to good health is possible. So if you're someone who is looking to break the cycle of injury, we hope this episode inspires you as much as Rochelle has inspired us as treating clinicians. Let's get ready to run with Rochelle Basil. All right. Well, welcome to the Ready to Run podcast. Today we have an exciting guest, good friend, patient, and elite runner and coach, and the list goes on. Rochelle Skeets Basil. You still go by that, right?
I just dropped the Skeets. It's now official after almost 8 years.
Wow.
Rochelle Basil.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
You sure that dog mom? I think that's a
dog mom.
That is very
maybe
important.
In the top five.
That's right. Dog mom of two. Cool. Well, yeah, we're excited to talk about basically what it takes to get from an injury state to the road to recovery, and really what it takes from a perspective of an athlete who is also a coach. And this is something Kurt and I really talk a lot about on our podcast, and have talked about with our patients about how a lot of these things really truly take time, and it's really not even just time alone, but being proactive with that time. And so we're hoping to really dive into some of the things that you have gone through and what it took to get there. So welcome to the show, and just like we ask every other guest, let us know who you are and what gets you ready to run.
Hi, I am Rochelle, and thank you guys so much for having me here today. And also, I guess, thank you guys for putting up with me over the last couple of years and getting me here. So it's been a journey. What gets me ready to run, unfortunately, is probably 30 minutes of Movo board exercises to sort of woo my ankles into submission.
Get that midfoot moving.
Almost. Yeah. That and coffee.
Nice. Yeah. And you're pretty, you're a morning person, right? So you have a nice morning routine that you've pretty much been doing for the past year, right?
I do. Yeah. I am a hellaciously early riser. But I've come to just kind of embrace it. I enjoy the time alone. No one can bother me. The dogs are in bed. So I just do some work and get ready. Mm-hmm.
Nice. And are you doing the same MOBO routine every day, or you're kind of cycling through stuff, or periodizing it a bit?
I do not periodize it very well.
I know we talk about, I feel like every 6 weeks or 2 months or so, we talk about what would be some good stuff to do.
Yeah, I guess it is. You know, I do some things every day, like non-negotiable. And then depending if it's a workout or easy run, I can get away with more or less priming. Mm-hmm. But I know that I cannot not do any ankle mobility before I run.
Right.
So you have your formula and you kind of stick to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Neely and I were talking about this on a run the other day. We're like, remember when we were 20 and we could wake up and run 20 minutes later? And we both like kind of looked at each other and shuddered.
Yeah,
like,
those days are gone.
Long gone.
No caffeine, just out the door. Yeah.
No caffeine, no food, no rolling.
Yeah. I mean, I guess everyone likes their repetition. I think now, like, my son's like just over 2 years old, and like for him, like his routine is like Blippi at the zoo. Like 24 minutes of Blippi at the zoo.
24.
That's what gets him going. So it sounds like your routine with the Mobo is what your formula is, and that's what works for you. So that's great.
Does he watch the same episode?
The same episode. We've tried.
I'm sorry.
We've tried other episodes. I'll try to show him Blippi at the aquarium, Blippi at the park. And for those of you who don't have kids, just YouTube Blippi for like a couple minutes, and you'll understand the dissonance between repetition for a toddler, how they love it and they need it to learn, versus how it affects an adult, and how I'm just gonna leave it at that. And so, but it sounds like repetition for you really works well in terms of getting you ready to run.
Do you remember the first time you showed Logan Blippi at the zoo?
Literally 1 week ago.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. 1 week ago, instant regret,
and it is all he asked for. But yeah, we're here to talk about your story here. So let's just get a little landscape of like who you are as an athlete and as a coach and as a person. And tell us about your running history. Like when you really got involved as an elite athlete, and some of your background as a coach, and maybe how that's influenced how you perceive yourself as a runner.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess my running sort of trajectory and journey has been periodized by moments of sort of quick progression and then breaks or lack of consistency. So I wasn't a high school runner or anything like that. I grew up and went to high school in New Zealand. And then the very end of my senior year decided, I think about 2 months before our national meet, that I wanted to maybe be a runner. So I decided to become a runner and sort of had some instant success and was recruited off of that race, which landed me on the East Coast on a Division I scholarship. And I think that was tough because I didn't have sort of that repetition and routine, and I wasn't familiar with, you know, what to do, how to fuel. I didn't even know, you know, what a GPS watch was, any of this stuff. I don't even think I knew how far around a track was. So I was instantly a fish out of water. And from kind of like day one, just started clinging to habits of, you know, those around me, because I just assumed that they were doing things the right way and I had to make up for lost time, even though there was some underlying talent there. So I ran sort of on and off for 2.5 years in college. Ended up stopping running in my junior year just to focus on school and getting healthy, because by that point I had, at the age of 19 or 20, decided that I would probably run faster if I didn't eat anything, which sort of started a long history of issues in that realm. So I knew that I needed to get healthy, and my answer at the time was just to stop running and not really treat the root cause of the issue. Was more just to like get rid of my shoes and focus on other things. So not really actually address the problem in, you know, hindsight's 2020. So then I went on to work on after I graduated, I started working on my PhD, and we were in the lab and I was stressed and blah, blah, blah. Decided that it would be really nice to start running again. At which point I thought I wanted to run a marathon, and I said to my husband one day that I wanted to break 4 hours in the marathon. And he was like, this really didn't work out too well for you last time. So then I started running, and after a week, I was like, ooh, I wonder what I need to run to qualify for Boston. And then it just sort of snowballed from there. So then I ran my first marathon probably 8 months after that, I ran a 252 in the Indianapolis Monumental Marathon, and then ran for about another year after that. Then I had a bone injury, and then rehab from that, and then was sort of on and off for a couple of years until I ultimately ended up in your guys' care out here in Colorado. During that time, also when I was in graduate school, I started working with or sort of coaching some friends unofficially. I was working on my PhD in cognitive neuroscience, so had a strong interest in physiology, and I was just spending more and more time reading exercise phys versus more, you know, cognitive neuroscience work. And so just eventually became a very clear direction that I needed to go. And I was super thankful to be supported by my husband and, you know, those that mattered to me to be a coach.
Yeah, that's a fairly unique background to have as a coach with the cognitive neuroscience and the exercise phys, because so much of running is not just the physical, but also the mental aspect, which I'm sure we'll get into in a little bit. So, yeah, that's a pretty unique background. Thank you for sharing all that. So I guess in terms of the injury history, take us back to where you think this like starts for you.
Yeah, for me, to where I am now, it's, I think I was thinking on the drive here when I first met you guys. And first of all, when I was driving, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed. I was such a mess. And I think I've even apologized to Kurt. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
And I think I apologized back to you because I was like, oh, I didn't really realize that. So it was like a good reflection of for myself as a clinician, and then for other clinicians out there, like, you know, really try to get to know the person that you're working with and try to understand what they're going through, because, like, you know, if someone's coming in for ankle pain or a bone injury, like, we, you know, we're focused on like the things that we can measure and progress and whatnot, but then I remember there's like a lot behind that whole thing. So I think I apologize back to you for saying like, I didn't really even realize it until like literally like this past year when you started like telling me like all, you know, the stuff that you were like just dealing with through that whole time, you know.
Yeah, and I think so much of what makes us strong athletes, and especially in the endurance realm, is being so dedicated and so strong and putting on a good front and
ignoring things.
And, you know, when you're, I mean, you know, I was in denial for such a long time. It's like not even Matt could come to me or sort of, you know, shake me out of the cycle I was in. So it's hard to get out of. But I guess sort of ultimately, which led to, I guess we can call it a crash and burn.
So when was your first marathon and then your first Boston?
So my first marathon was the fall of 2016.
Okay.
And then I actually ran Boston the spring of 2017.
Okay.
Which was super fun. And I was not well prepared after, you know, such a short buildup. I hadn't figured out much about distance running other than that, you know, I could run fast for a long time. So that was tough. And then after Boston 2017, I then started working with a different coach who was a very close friend. And we worked together until we moved to Colorado. Mm-hmm. And we are still super close friends. He was a wonderful coach. But I think going into 2019, I was training for World Champs and Cross and London Marathon 2019. Mm. And that sort of, I think for me, whenever there's been a really, when there's been a time goal or something that I really want to work towards, so this is on all the people in my circle, if and when I decide that I care about a time again, for me, that's when I've gotten into trouble. You know, you start trying to cut some corners, or not literally try and trim a little fat, but, you know, you're trying to get every little piece you can or run a little faster here. You know, get in the pool a little bit longer, add an extra mile, not have this piece of cake or something. So for me, that's sort of where it's always sort of started. And for me, it's always been a very sneaky regression slide into like full on eating pathology, or lack of.
And I see that with a lot of, like, myself, like, it's interesting, like, as a young runner, like, in, like, a high school setting or something, or someone that's just starting in running, those habits are rewarded of, like, being, you know, a little bit obsessive and being very goal-oriented and very driven.
Well, it's because, like, you care and you're so dedicated.
Yeah. And so you're, like, you're getting positive feedback. So then it's, like, this big loop. And then where people get into the trouble is, if you can't, like, switch that off, or if you're, like, you know, just too, if you're kind of, like, too good at being, like, you know, driven to those things, which I think translates into a lot of other things in life. And interestingly, like, moving to Boulder and, like, meeting a lot of, like, elite runners that are, you know, way faster than me, like, a lot of them aren't like that, you know? So there's an interesting, like, breakup of, like, you know, the things that we think people that are better than us do, and then there's the things that I think they actually do. So I don't know, I just kind of word vomiting, but there's a difference between, we've said this before on the show, between, like, the mentality that you need to be good at training, and then the mentality that you need to be good at performing, and, like, how to balance those things. And it boils down to, like, a lot of times, like, mental health is like, running is a good crutch for kind of some of those behaviors, but it can't be your only strategy, you know, for kind of dealing with stuff.
Yeah. And it's so refreshing to meet people. I think once you, like, post, you know, once you're 10 plus years post-collegiately, it's so refreshing to meet people who are just more balanced humans and individuals, and to see them doing really well. And it's rewarding, and it just sort of keeps, you know, like, to me, it helps keep my head on straight, just to be like, okay, like, this is what you need to do. And that sort of being a slave to a program or mileage or paces, that sort of obsession, that doesn't mean you're dedicated and going to do well. You know, being dedicated means taking care of your body. It means getting all your fuel ready for your long run. It means resting after, getting body work. It's not just pounding pavement and, for me, you know, not eating enough. Mm-hmm. But I think that comes with time. It comes with thinking that you're never going to run again. And I think having a lot of good people in your corner who are always watching out for you. And then, two, knowing that you need to have people sort of watching out for you.
Yeah. And I think we've talked about before, you've had a few people over the years that, like, you were close enough with that they could really kind of, like, strongly nudge you in the right direction of, like, you're trying to, like, gloss over some of, like, the, you know, deeper issues around maybe food or things like that. And like, they kind of, like, kept you in check and were like, no, you need, this is where you need to focus on. And, like, this is more of a problem than you might think it is. And then I know that you've talked with people that are maybe a few years behind you in their journey to recovery, and, you know, trying to, like, kind of give them that nudge in the right direction of, like, you know, stop, like, you need to, like, address these root things and not try to move forward too quickly without, like, kind of really getting to, like, the root of the, you know, the cause of these strings of injuries.
Yeah. And it's hard, and it's frustrating too, because, you know, those of us who do good in sport and athletics, we tend to be overachievers in lots of areas in life. And this is something I see a lot with the athletes I coach too. Like, these are highly successful individuals, and it's really hard to not get what you want when you put in hard work. Mm-hmm. And so for me to be working hard and getting hurt, I think ultimately, I mean, I'm a fairly educated person when it comes to not myself. But, you know, I'm, like, getting all these fractures, and it's like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. This is weird. You know, I didn't deserve to have this happen. It's like, you know, you look terrible. Like, of course this is what happened. But even after I'd been, you know, healthy for almost a year, I ended up with my last bone stress injury. And I mean, my coach and I, and I think all of us here at the table, were sort of taken back by that, because I really, you know, I wasn't exhibiting sort of any sort of disordered pathology surrounding like things that I had been doing. But I think in terms of recovery from, you know, a very low state of energy availability, you're, you know, if you think of like a traffic light analogy, I was still like in a what do you guys call it here? Yellow or orange light? What's in the middle here?
Yellow.
Yeah, I'd say yellow.
I would say, I would say orange. So yeah. I would say I was like an orange light in terms of return to run, return to play. And to sort of have that setback was really, really hard because I'd spent a whole year of the most pathetically slow run walk. You know, I was running, mm-hmm. I don't know, 10, 15 miles a week. Mm-hmm. And I was so patient and so consistent. And then I was finally getting a little bit faster and running workouts. And then seemingly out of nowhere to have a fracture in a non-weight bearing bone was really, really hard. But I think on reflection, it was just, I just needed time more than anything. I needed to keep doing all the right things. And mm-hmm. I'm really proud that I didn't let that set me back down a hole, because I really easily could have been like, you know what?
Final straw.
Like that, you know what? I'm going to go back and I'm just going to like get in the pool 5 hours a day and I'm going to run mm-hmm. and I'm going to get on my Peloton and mm-hmm. I'm not going to, you know, eat enough. Mm-hmm. But I think I came through that like so much stronger, and it's really fun now to be in a different place and to just be able to like run consistently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Efren, maybe you could talk about like that timeline of, you know, there's the amount of time that like of low energy availability that you, it's only a few days, but if it's been, you know, weeks or months or years in some individuals, like it takes a few days to get caught up in terms of like the energy availability, but then it's, you know, months to get caught up in terms of like the hormone kind of balance. And then potentially months to years in terms of your bones' ability to adapt to load and kind of normalize, right?
Yeah, that's a pretty good summary. There was a paper, the first one came out in 2014 on relative energy deficiency in sport. And then the last updated paper was in 2018. And they outline kind of the timeline of recovery from somebody with relative energy deficiency in sport. And we break up into three segments. There's the energy availability, time to correct, which is weeks to months. Then there's the if you've lost your menstrual cycle, that takes time to come back as well. And that could be months to years. And then there's the bone, which can often take years. And for some, if depending on when they had their first injury, some of that bone recovery may not be complete back to like a normal level. So that just kind of drives the conversation that I try to have from day one for when I see an athlete who's had multiple bone injuries, that this is not like a quick fix. This is definitely a months to years long process. And that's hard information to digest, I think, for a lot of athletes. And there's a lot of things that it takes to get to that level in terms of like making sure you have the proper team around you with a physical therapist, physician, sometimes an endocrinologist if it has involved like bone metabolism and mental health as well as an important piece to address, because that's hard. And these injuries, I think the hard part is you're never really recovered, but you are recovering. And it's something that's like always, at least what I've heard from athletes, is that it's they may be in a good state, but there's always that little background noise of like, I know what it was like to be like kind of at rock bottom, and I don't want to be back there. Is that an accurate?
Yeah, that's actually super sort of fitting and timely. I was running with a buddy this morning, and he's not super great at fueling, and you know, we were doing a decent long run. So I was, you know, I had all my stuff before and I'm taking a gel every 30 minutes and he's significantly older than me. So I always nag him and he's like, yes, mom. And, you know, I took the last gel and he goes, don't we have like 10 minutes left or something? And he wasn't trying to shame me or anything, but I was also encouraging him. I was like, you know what? You'd feel much better if you just took a gel. And I said to him, I was like, I'm so scared of accidentally falling into like a hole just of not enough carbs or like protein or something, like, not that I'm taking protein on a long run, but just in terms of like overall number of carbs per hour of long run, I'm like, I would much rather take extra gels or
100 calories, you know, extra, like, jellies.
And like, I think someone said to me, like, what is 100 calories gonna do to, like, that doesn't, yeah, you're not gonna not fit your clothes because you took in an extra gel or something. I mean, it's so silly, but yeah, when you're in the thick of not being in a good place, it's like, mm-hmm, oh my, I would micromanage, mm-hmm, the heck out of a gel. Like, how long, you know, I was the queen of like a fasted 18-mile run, which is unfathomable now, but I think it's always in the back of my mind just because I want to do the right things. Mm-hmm. And I think it helps living in a place like this because I'm always so sad when I don't get to play. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Especially now we're getting through winter. Ugh. And it's going to be nice out.
Thank goodness. I mean,
it's been not terrible out, but it has been a cold, snowy winter.
Yeah. It's been pretty bad.
Yeah. But that's something I didn't learn until a couple of years ago, is that, like, you know, the benefits of fueling on a run, especially a long run, like, you're going to increase your recovery time, and like, you're going to eat the same amount of calories, but the sooner you eat it, the better, kind of a thing.
Yeah. So. And you're just not wrecked. You know, it's, I mean, you and I both ran long this morning, and that was a couple of hours ago, and we're here and mostly, mm-hmm, functioning.
Yeah.
And, you know, now you're not spending the weekend on the couch. I mean, you have Greta, I have, you know, we got to walk the dogs. We've got, you know, we have a life to get to once the run is sort of closed.
Mm-hmm. I'm laughing because I'm thinking about what I ate today. Should we share what we ate today after our long runs, or is that too much?
We can do that. I'm trying to think because it comes in, there's like multiple rounds.
I ate two bagels with
after
butter,
your run?
After my run. Before, I ate two pieces of toast and a banana. And then I had Martin and two gels. And then I just ate I was late getting here because I was eating a quesadilla. So yeah, I'm crushing the carbs today.
Yeah. It's so good.
But, yeah, it is like literally like hard to, if you're running for 2 hours, like it's kind of like a full time job to like make sure that you're eating enough.
It's hard. And I see this with a lot of athletes I work with too. A lot of underfueling is not, it's very unintentional.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, the people that I'm working with, and I mean, the patients you guys both treat, these are people that have lives and full-time jobs, you know, and they only have 45 minutes in the morning to run and then 5 minutes to themselves before, mm-hmm, they're on to the next time of day. And before they know it, it's been 3 hours and they haven't eaten. And that's so hard in terms of recovery. So I think what I've been through is so, oh, I'm going to get back to what I ate after my long run in a minute. Oh. It's so helpful to sort of see these red flags just in the, you know, things athletes are saying, like, oh, I'm really, really tired or feeling this or feeling that. And then after a while, you know, you sort of start to probe on, mm-hmm, how is your nutrition looking? How is sleep looking? And. Yeah.
But I do think that is I like that you say red flag, because like, there is like the unintentional part of it, but then I think, you know, a lot of times there is a little bit of like a deeper level of intent for some folks, you know, it's like, oh, well, like, you know, I missed lunch, but it's okay. That way I'll like not get those calories. So I think that does happen with not everybody, with some people, in the running world. But I don't know, maybe that's just carryover from our culture in the US where we're very concerned about our overall like obesity level and just like aesthetics of how everyone looks,
you know. Yeah, and like, I think, you know, growing up in the 90s too was such a bad time for just diet culture and messaging in general. I think we got a lot of bad messaging from our parents and their peers, where they weren't trying to mess us up or give us bad information, but I just think that's what was there. And so that sort of, I mean, kids are picking up on, I mean, as you guys know, they're picking up on everything, you know, we're sponges, mm-hmm, when we're little.
Mm-hmm.
Post long run, I had a decaf coffee because I was taking my iron pill, which I'm very diligent about.
Oh, okay.
And a muffin straight away. Nice. And then we went home. I ran with a buddy and then made a sweet potato and quinoa bowl with some smoked turkey.
That sounds amazing.
Wow.
It was really good.
Yeah. That sounds straight out of a cookbook or something.
It's very Boulder.
Some kale in there, maybe.
No, kale is so much work to chew.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
We wanted to take a quick break to share our experience with Joint Health Plus from Prevenex. Joint pain is one of the most common injuries seen in runners of all ages and becomes increasingly prevalent as we get older. Luckily, we know that running is not bad for your knees and joints and does not increase your risk of osteoarthritis. In fact, being physically active and exercising regularly is very important for joint health and overall health.
I've tried a number of products over the years targeted at joint health and haven't liked any as much as I like this new blend from Prevenix called Joint Health Plus. I've taken it for about 6 months now and had my best marathon training block with less knee and ankle stiffness after long runs and bigger workouts. I also seem to come off the marathon really well in terms of recovery. It uses a proprietary blend of anti-inflammatories that are clinically proven to decrease pain in people who exercise. I think it is definitely worth giving a try for a couple months if you're dealing with any joint pain or stiffness, in conjunction, of course, with strengthening, load management, and overall eating well and doing all of the other little things that we all should be doing. Check out Prevenix.com, that's Previnex, and use code READYTORUN for 15% off your first order. Prevenix offers a 100% satisfaction money-back guarantee, and their mission is to spread health to all of us.
So just so we all have a full like lens into where you were, take us back to like the London Marathon, where at least where some of this I wouldn't say started, but that was a big event.
It's like kind of the main.
Yeah,
main
I think
injury.
That was yeah the catalyst. So right before London Marathon, I had gone over to Europe to race World Cross Country Champs, and something went awry. There was no sort of trauma to my ankle, but at some point I sustained a small tear to my peroneal tendon and was told that I was okay to race. So I sort of, in hindsight, I shouldn't have raced, but I did because I told I was able to, and came home and got imaging, and it was probably 5 weeks out from London, and there was a tear, but I was getting treatment every day and going to the pool. And since I wasn't running so much, and this is kind of therapeutic because I haven't really thought about it before until now, but I guess since I wasn't running, I started just, and honestly too, my appetite probably completely tanked from not running. I think I just dropped a bunch of weight intentionally and unintentionally because, you know, I wasn't running. So I was like, oh, I need to make it easier for myself once I start running, if I can even run London. Mm-hmm. So we went over to London. You know, I wasn't totally pain-free, but I ran the marathon. It is somehow my PR to date, which is, I'm excited to hopefully maybe one day beat that in a much better place. And unfortunately, after London Marathon, my peroneal tendon was completely torn and I was in a lot of pain. So it needed a pretty aggressive fixing. That's the non-medical term for it. And I think just a combination of being like very depressed and very upset and then being non-weight bearing for forever, basically. I think I was 16 weeks non-weight bearing.
Wow.
I kind of just shriveled up on the couch, just waiting to be cleared. And I think during that time, I, you know, lost probably even more bone density. You know, it can be very isolating post-surgery. We'd also moved to Colorado during that time. So, you know, I didn't have a social support. My husband was working full-time and in school full-time. So I was just kind of left to my own devices to, you know, manage the small allotment of calories that I would allow myself to have. And then once I was cleared to cross train, I spent a lot of time doing that. And then ultimately, I think the first sort of bone injury after that was my sacrum after running on the Ultra G. And then we had a couple more.
But yeah, that is, I didn't think about the non-weight bearing for, I guess I didn't realize that you had been non-weight bearing for that period of time after the surgery, but that's the perfect storm of like that whole kind of situation of being injured and then being bummed about that, and then also moving and then not like putting weight through your legs and body for a period of time.
Oh, and I mean, now that I'm like looking back, I'm like, of course this happened. There was just too many things. I was also trying to turn around and come back quickly with the hopes of making the New Zealand team the next year. So I'd had surgery in late June of 2019. And I was like, oh, well, maybe. And the doctors were kind of like, you know, very noncommittal. They're like, maybe, maybe not. So of course I took that as, oh, sure. Like I can run a marathon soon. So again, you know, there was this pressure of trying to run a time and trying to get back quickly. So in my mind, in like peak disordered mode was.
And you had, to be fair, you had kind of just done that. Like, I mean, your ankle blew up afterwards,
but yeah.
You did just cross train and then run a marathon.
Yeah. I'm very good at cross training.
So like, that's not a wild thought to have like, oh, like I'm just coming back from this major surgery, but like I can do all these things and then like this might work out. And I think now, like after, you know, having more experience, I think we're kind of catching people earlier when we kind of like get these little glimpses of like, oh, like, you know, we said, you know, bike for 60 to 90 minutes max. And then this person did like 4 hours on the bike trainer or something, you know, like, okay, well, I mean, maybe we need to like very like clearly address like something there. And so, yeah, I wish that, you know, 4 years ago or 3 years ago, I knew now what I had, you know, what I didn't know, like when we first started working together. And I think could have, yeah, saved you some, at least some headaches of like setting an expectation of like, this is going to take some more time, or like just being, picking up on some cues better, like knowing how to better like talk about things. But yeah, it's all this stuff is pretty new to clinicians. Like it's kind of frustrating for us. Like, you know, these studies come out and, you know, 2014 or so, but it takes like, you know, 10 years to really like get out
to circulate, you know, the learnings.
Yeah, clinicians, and like, we're super into this stuff. And a lot of people we interact with are really into this stuff. So, you know, if this is happening to somebody in, you know, a town somewhere else, it's not very running centric, like they're going to get, yeah, not the best advice maybe. Yeah, there's a lot that we can do better in the medical field, like addressing particularly like bone stress injuries, but even like helping people come back from surgeries and like setting expectations and that sort of a thing, from like, you know, you'll be able to run, but you should not expect to race a marathon at your PR, like, you know, 8 months from now or a year from now. And maybe, but like, not, you know, just having the confidence to say like, not a good idea.
Yeah. And even, I mean, so last year, the end of 2022, so I ran my first marathon back in almost 5 years. And even, wow, that's like so long. Yeah. Even going into that, we were sort of like, we were cautiously optimistic.
Cautiously optimistic. Well, because you had been super consistent and patient. And I think a really important thing for you has been working with your coach who you trust and respect and listen to, you know, like being a coach yourself, that's also kind of a red flag of like people that are going to, you know, do what they think they need. So I think, yeah, you were really good at like listening to his advice, and your mileage wasn't what you thought it should be to run a, you know, a super fast marathon, but you were going into it. And yeah, that's really, things started to like accelerate the couple months leading up to that, I think.
And, yeah.
And now you're just in a better, we want to talk about the race, I think. but now you're in a place where like you're training more than you have since the ankle injury, and your body's like handling everything really well. And you just seem to be having, you know, fun with what you're doing and the people that you're running with. And yeah, I'm just excited for your next couple years or longer. You know, I just think you're in a good place to build from here.
Yeah, it's been kind of fun. I feel like this is almost not a victory lap, you know, because I feel like I'm almost like kind of restarting. Like this is, last year was my first year I've ever had without an injury. And I feel like to have run you know, the times that I've run, it's kind of ridiculous that I got away with what I did. So it's exciting, I think, but a little scary. It's refreshing to be running just much less volume. You know, I used to think that I had to run 90 miles a week to be running or to be competitive. And like, I can get pretty fit running 35, 40 miles a week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, post CIM, we've been able to sort of pick up where we left off. So mm-hmm. it's been fun to sort of get little hints of volume back.
Yeah. And just like, now like having to start from, like, you're kind of starting like from where you have all, you've run these times and you have this experience in running and coaching, but you're kind of like starting from the ground up. So like progressing, you know, mileage and workouts, and knowing that you're something like, I know we've talked about, and I say to people, like, your rate limiting factor isn't like your aerobic fitness or your ability to adapt in that sense. It's, you know, like what should I responsibly do for my body in terms of an injury. And like, soon you won't always have to think like that, but I think yeah, like coming out of that cycle, your number one goal again for this year should be like, you know, like just be consistent and build up slowly and enjoy it, and, you know, knock on wood, not have any setbacks.
And nothing. And it's so funny too, because, you know, I coach full time. I literally all day, every day, I'm harping on consistency and layering bricks and all these things. But when it's you, it's very different. And I think that's why it's important for, you know, us to have coaches. I think once I asked Efren if I could be in charge of myself, and he responded very strongly with a no.
yeah,
so I think I have lost all, and it's fine. I am very okay with having lost responsibility for being in charge mm-hmm. of my programming, but it is nice to, I think it's really important to have trust in, you know, the person mm-hmm. in charge of your program and in charge of your care, because it makes you, just stops me from having to think about it.
Yeah, it was a hard no, but it wasn't a hard no the first day I saw you. It was this was like a year plus of like developing trust. I think that's important. Yeah. But yeah, it's like one of these things where like as patients who are going through this, to like really like advocate for yourself when you're trying to express a concern to the person that is treating you. Because simply saying no, don't run, without gathering all the data as to why this is, or the motivation as to why this is, why I'm saying what I'm saying, can be somewhat hurtful to the athlete, and it may feel like dismissive. So just one thing that, you know, this is after a year and a half mm-hmm. of knowing each other, that the hard no came about. But also knowing too, it's hard to see things for yourself when you're in it. Even if you're like a coach or an athlete or even a PT or myself, I even had my own stress factor. Like I was fully capable of lying to myself, until I got an MRI, mm-hmm. Which told me I had a stress factor. So, having that trust is super, super important, in your team. So you got to this point now, where you were, a year, injury free, which is one of our big goals for you and your goal for yourself. And then we had CIM. Tell us about your race.
Yeah, it was really, it was fun. It was a very different build to what I had ever done going into a marathon. So I was running very, very low mileage. And I think we probably only had three or four sort of longer runs, so above 18 miles. So with that came a lack of practice in race shoes, and the time that sort of the super shoes were really evolving quickly was when I was on the sideline. So I hadn't had a lot of sort of practice in them. So I had worn, you know, some models in workouts and a couple of shorter races, and decided they weren't for me. And then ultimately we just kind of got to a point and I was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to wear for this marathon? And ultimately settled on a shoe that I did two long runs in and had very minor foot discomfort, but nothing that renders you on the side of the road during a marathon taking your shoes off. So the beginning of CIM was kind of, it was good. You know, I'm at this race. I was super excited and happy to be there. And I was wearing my fresh new Alpha Flies, the second iteration, I might add, because I think that is important. And it was kind of I wonder if the humidity played into it at all. But I also think I just hadn't had a lot of time on my feet over 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And the amount of just sort of edema and swelling in my feet and ankles, especially on the surgical side, mm-hmm. on a longer effort was just something that hadn't been taken into account for. And mm-hmm. so...
You know, like running faster.
Yeah. You know, it was a hard effort.
Downhill. The first half of the race, there's like more downhill and uphill, but...
it's a hard course.
Yeah.
So by about mile 14, I started having a pretty painful pain. That's another good term for you.
A painful pain.
And just a regular pain. It was a painful pain. It was a sort of like every single step I was kind of dreading and like, ugh, this doesn't feel good on the outside of my little toes. And so I tried to sort of refocus and think about, you know, using my first metatarsal and think about my next bottle or next gel or something like that. And so by mile 18, I kind of made a deal with myself that I would stop quickly and take the shoes off, splay my feet, which I had experienced before. So I was like, let me just take them off really quick, let my feet move and put the shoes back on. And truly my goal was to cross the start line, which I'd already done. So I was halfway there. And then the other goal was to cross the finish line. I should have been more specific and said with shoes in hindsight. But so at mile 18, I stop. I take off one shoe. But unfortunately, my hands were so cold, I couldn't untie the right shoe. So I take the left foot out and I'm like, you know what? This is good. You know, this is as good as we're going to get. I put the left shoe back on. I run again for another mile, at which point the other foot was kind of screaming like, excuse me, like that really wasn't fair. So I was like, oh, shoot. So I stop again. I'm trying to untie the shoe, and I cannot get it. So ultimately, I nicely ask for help. And I think people around me were very confused. I'm like, what is she doing? And people are running by me, and I'm looking at the elapsed time on my watch thinking, oh, man, this is the day. So a lovely lady helped. She pulls the shoe off my foot. She unties it. She's apologizing that she's taking so long. And I'm like, don't worry. It's, you know. Just please untie the 5 knots that I put on these. So this is around mile 18, maybe 18 and a half. And I'm kind of like, my brain is marathon-y at this point.
Not really in the real civilized world. You're kind of in the more like...
I'm in the less civilized version of the world. I'm shoeless on the side of the road in Sacramento. So I put my shoe back on and then, you know, I run for another 8 to 10 minutes and... both my feet were screaming again. So at that point in my state of consciousness, I decide that I should probably just take my shoes off because I couldn't step anymore. I wasn't going to be able to get to the finish running with shoes on. So I take the shoes off and then I immediately thought of the two of you and what happens if I get a bone stress injury from running 5 to 6 miles shoeless on the road. And I immediately cleared myself of all guilt, just so you know. I decided that it would not be my fault from an energy perspective because I was, you know, very healthy and I was still fueling without my shoes on. So I, by some miracle, got to the end of the race. I only tore one of my socks mm-hmm. and the bottom of that foot was in, really, I don't think my feet were that bad.
They weren't that bad. I mean, they
you don't have to be
would
nice.
Have been concerning if we hadn't have known to about the running barefoot incident as to why there is so much black and blue on the entire bottom of your foot. But I think, yeah, given that you ran that far on a city street. And then I think the other silver lining is that if you can run 6 miles barefoot at the end of a marathon and not break your foot, then we can be pretty confident in
my recovery,
your ability of bone to adapt to load.
That's probably like the hardest kind of stress test you can have.
Yeah.
He really, really wanted to challenge us here.
I was pretty proud. I remember when I was texting you, Dr. C, I was like, my bones are the real MVP.
Actually, the real MVP is probably whatever sock you wore.
I know. CEP compression socks.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
CEP. Highly recommend. I cannot believe that the right one didn't get a hole in it.
And this lady that helped out, did she like bike with you the whole way?
So that's right. I guess this is another wonderful part of the story. So for the first part, I have the shoes on my hands and I'm kind of like a T-Rex. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking to myself, this is what I'm like, you know, so I'm like, you know, this is really funny right now. And I'm sure, you know, when I get to my phone afterwards and people are freaking out when my paces completely fell off. And so I'm thinking this would be really funny. The photos with these shoes on my hands. And then I decided that it was not efficient. Running with shoes on my hands was not efficient.
It's not
running,
as aerodynamic.
Yeah, right. It was not as aerodynamic as just running free, running shoeless. Right.
Accelerated mass on your hands.
Yeah, exactly. Just, yeah. So this poor woman was cycling next to me and I made eye contact with her. And I just kind of locked in and said, hey, are you going to the finish? And I don't even know if she finished. I don't even think she replied to me. And I threw my shoes at her and just said, please take these to the finish. And she came by me a couple of miles later.
So she just rolled with it.
She got the shoes. She was kind of gone. And then around mile 24, she rode by me and she was, I have your shoes. I'm going to the finish. And I'm kind of like, oh crap.
Now
I have to finish. I'm like, right. I have really inconvenienced this woman.
Did she catch the shoes when you threw them?
Like, yeah, she had a little basket.
She was mid-bike. Okay.
No, I think they went on the ground. I think I just threw them in her direction. She didn't catch them on the bike.
Okay, I'm picturing her catching them.
No,
okay,
they definitely went on the floor.
Okay, it's not as exciting anymore. Yeah. But okay.
She was inconvenienced multiple times by me. And I wish I knew who this angel is. So then she comes by me at mile 24 and tells me that she has my shoes and she still intends on going to the finish, at which point I am over this idea. I'm okay with losing my $209 shoes. I just want to be done. But I'm like, oh, out of, you know, respect for her and ruining her bike ride, I will get to the finish. Well, what I had forgotten about was at the finish line of a marathon.
Yeah,
and
it's like 8,
you know,
or 10,
there's thousands of people. There's fences. There's tents. There's people, and there's me shoeless at the finish line, just kind of so out of it. And people are asking if I'm okay, and I'm like, oh, maybe I'll call my coach, you know. So I get on the phone and try to tell him what happened, and he's just like, "We'll talk later." And then I want some water, and eventually I got my shoes back. She had. I had, since we were in the championship, we had our name on our bib. Mm. So she had actually taken them to the little elite tent situation at the finish. So I was reunited with the shoes. They now sit.
Good thing.
They sit in my laundry room. I'm not sure what will happen with them.
Well, hopefully if she's listening, maybe she'll find you. And
yeah.
And send her the shoes and she can hang them on her fireplace or something.
I spent a lot of time figuring out how to get in touch with her. But, I mean, she is just unidentified.
Maybe you could melt the shoes down and make like a little medallion or something. And she could hang it up on like a, I don't know, like a window or something.
Well, it's a kicker because, I mean, they have like, they don't even have a whole marathon. I mean, they have two longish runs and two-thirds of a marathon. Yeah.
So they've got some miles in there.
Yeah, just not with my feet.
Yeah. So it's not the way that I'm sure you envisioned this kind of comeback marathon to end. But I still think it was definitely a net positive. And then, yeah, kind of a pretty funny story to tell about the shoes situation. Now, I'm sure it wasn't a while.
It wasn't perfect, obviously. I would have loved to have run fast and kept my shoes on.
You still ran, what was your time? Like, you still ran.
I ran like 2:52. I think I ran about the same time as my first marathon, which I kind of thought was kind of cool.
Yeah,
with like a nice.
Taking the shoes off.
Full circle.
Full circle, yeah.
And I've had this conversation with a couple of friends in terms of like goal setting. And I really didn't have any, you know, if you asked me before going into CIM, what was my goal? I just want to run. I want to finish. And I really wasn't, even though that was all that I had, I kind of felt like I was being like a little bit coy or a little bit guarded, or maybe I was scared. But it was kind of cool to finish and feel very content and like like I had really done what I set out to do. And mm-hmm. I felt like a bit of a jerk during the race, at points when I'd be running earlier on with shoes and, you know, you're running in a pack and people, what are you trying to run? And I'm saying, I'm just trying to finish, we're going through the huff and, you know, 80 minutes and they're like, okay, sure.
Yeah.
But that really was all I wanted to do. So had I known that I was going to run that time, I really didn't have a goal time. It was just, my coach was very, he's like, this is a stepping stone. This is part of a larger, objective. And the goal was to get there and be healthy. And, and I recovered really well from the race, which was, I think we were both pretty surprised how quickly I bounced back.
Yeah. Cool. And now for your next, a big thing that, I guess we're all working on, but you're trying to find a racing shoe that's going to work for you. And we're trying to figure out how we can bridge that gap. So working on that. And then you've got a marathon coming up in a couple months, right?
Yeah. So I think we are 15 or 16 weeks. I am going to run the Gold Coast Marathon cool. in Australia, which is very close to the motherland of New Zealand. So I'm excited to, have a slightly more traditional build. I only run 5 days a week, and I don't think that will change. I think we've got a good sort of formula for what works for me, and I can get in, a good average per day across that and rest a day, and it gives me flexibility if I want to cross train or take another off day. So I'm excited. And just really trying to work on figuring out the footwear situation.
Yeah. Well, we got 4 months to do it.
And I've got some more long runs. And I feel better knowing that I'm already running more now than I was 6 weeks out from CIM. So I don't feel that sort of crunch to figure things out, which is always nice.
Yeah. So we just have a couple minutes left. And one thing I feel like we can't let go here is how you've really changed the narrative with your career over these past couple of years. And specifically what I'm referring to is you dyeing your hair pink. Because you posted on this in the past, where I think there was a quote from like about a year ago in July 2022, so probably about a year from your next goal race, where you talked about how you dyed your hair, but it was a positive thing this time around, whereas traditionally I think you had said, this is what I do when everything is broken. Tell us about how you took that thing that was a negative and then turned it into something that was positive and now empowering. And then what's the message you want to send to people who are listening who have been in your position?
Yeah. No, that's super, super fun. And it was never meant to be, anything meaningful. And I feel like I'm just, I'm tall, I have boring blonde hair. And so I think when I first dyed my hair bright, bright pink was in 2019, right after my surgery and the sacral stress fracture. And I remember, I just felt like I was just kind of like spiraling out of control and was like, you know what? Why not dye my hair bright pink? No one's going to know, no one's going to notice.
No one's ever going to see it.
No one's ever going to see it. It doesn't matter, and when I look back on it, I'm like, it was just like a distraction, or, it was me waving something, off to the side to really detract from a bigger picture and issue. And so, of course, my hairdresser, who I love and is great, and she's going to color my hair all sorts of fun colors. So, it was like wicked pink. It was like bright, bright magenta. So that was super fun and a good distraction, I think, from the larger problem at hand. And, then it sort of faded and I'd go back blonde. And then it was last summer in July, I was running with a girlfriend, and I feel like for me, whenever I want to do something like dye my hair or get a tattoo or pierce my ears, it's like always like a very impulsive feeling. And I said to her on a run, I was like, oh, I really want to dye my hair. And I was like, oh, well, I can't, because that's what I do when something really bad happens or when I'm just like trying to distract from something bad. And she's like, you can dye your hair and like things can be good. And that kind of planted the seed of, I was like, oh, you know what? So I went back and dyed it pink, and it just felt very cyclical, which, you know, I like closure and routine and all these good things. So it felt, you know, just kind of fun. And it's also just fun to have pink hair.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, no, I just like how you, like, you took that into something that's like, yeah, it's just empowering after going through all the things you had gone through. Just sends a really good message to people.
Yeah, I'm super excited for you in this next chapter of your running, and proud of how, you know, far you've come. And even though, like, when I think back to like 3 or 4 years ago, like, we didn't realize like that there was a far to go, you know, I think, like, but now looking back, it's, you know, just how consistent you've been with all of the little things. And we talked about ankle mobility, and then like the strength training that you've been really good about doing. And then, yeah, just like, staying the course with, how long of, kind of this string of different things you had pop up took to get better. So, I think, yeah, super inspiring to people that are kind of like in the middle of something, and it can be really hard to see that there is like a good ending. And yeah, there can be definitely be a good ending. You just have to keep taking it as well as you can. So, yeah, thanks so much for sharing your story, and appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you, guys. And thank you guys so much for everything, like just sticking. I mean, you guys had no idea what you were in for. I remember meeting Dr. C in a spin class years ago, and I'm sure he never anticipated sitting here now almost 4 years later after everything. And it's just, it's hard when you're in the thick of it. And I'm sure you guys both see people that like are stuck in this rut, but I think you just have to like be stubborn and persistent, and you know, you have to be like very compassionate, right? Because you can't just say no to someone or give them the hard truth off the bat, because you're not going to build that trust that is needed in that relationship. And even though it's been like hard and not super fun, I still am like really, really grateful to have been through this journey and to be here now, because it's kind of cool, because a lot of people don't get back to here. So I hope more people can, you know, get to this place quicker than I did. And I think that's definitely like a huge win just for running and endurance sport in general.
Yeah. And just enjoying competition aside, just enjoying going for runs, you know, with your friends and being outside, and just enjoying being able to do whatever you want to do. So awesome. Well, thanks again. And thanks for coming by.